You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Hey, you ready to rock this place out, dude?
Ultimate hype man.
He was on fire last night.
And it's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Word association before we get you out of here. Eddie Johnson.
Twister.
When will we see Simon Borg taking over Snapchat and MLS?
Do you know
what Snapchat is, since winky faces are not your thing?
No, I do, and Snapchat wanted all my contacts, and I refused to give it my contacts.
Simon, you are an idiot.
We can't prove it.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you're listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 94. I am Andrew Wiebe. And right next to me, Simon Borg, brow furrowed, very busy, just typical MLS playoffs, Simon Borg. David the Gasman Goss here as well on this Thursday. We're looking ahead. Some big show for you today as we approach these second legs of the conference semifinals. We'll have DC United's Bobby Boswell in the first segment. We're a fan of his, I should say. Always a great guest to have on, a guy who's willing to go both on the game side and also on the life side. I'm sure we'll get a little bit from both of them. But Simon, how you doing on this Thursday? You look a little bit downtrodden, a little bit.
Really? Why?
Yeah, you were staring at the table just now. You couldn't even lock eyes with me. It was almost as if you were avoiding my gaze.
Maybe because I'm still getting over the fact that you choose to highlight that I got a new jacket. And that every time I come in wearing something, you have a comment.
It was a brand new jacket.
Are we in high school still?
No.
Simon, because that's the last time. Excuse me, David.
Yes? I'm going to commiserate with you on this by saying I think you're a hypocrite. Because I think
you make comments
when other people have things that are.
All right, give me the last comment I made.
Yes, classic Simon Borg argument. I need to list every single comment that Simon Borg has ever
made. I couldn't care less.
Actually, no, you do.
I couldn't when care I less have what the buttons, anyone's
the buttons on my collar. You know, like, let's say I'm wearing a collared shirt.
An Oxford shirt.
Thank you. Yep. And the Oxford
buttons. I recommend to you not to wear it because it looks bad.
So it's more of a
career advice type thing to you. Yeah, I think it's disgusting. I'm just sharing with you because I care about you and I don't want you to wear
it. I actually think it looks really stupid when you have the Oxford buttons and you don't button it. It's like you forgot to do something before you left the house. But look, Simon, it was a nice North Face jacket you had on. I knew it was brand new.
I didn't even know it was a North Face jacket.
It's listed on the jacket.
I didn't even notice it.
Stop paying attention.
Can we all agree on something? The person who pays too much attention to the other person's clothes, a little weird.
And my argument here for you, David, and for all the listeners at home, is that there's something about this jacket that Simon is trying to draw attention away from, and that is why when I even mentioned it out in the office, he blew up in this whole tirade.
No.
And I think it's just he's trying to hide the fact that his wife bought him a new jacket. Your wife bought you a new jacket. Maybe you'll wear it in a couple weeks. If it's a cold weather MLS Cup, you'll be nice and toasty, and somebody there in that stadium will comment on it as well.
I hope and pray.
Well, let's get right into it, guys. Four games to preview. We're going to start in the Eastern Conference. DC and Red Bull New York, 2:30 p.m. on Saturday. That at RFK Stadium on NBC and Univision Deportes. Of course, you can catch it right here on SiriusXM FC Channel 94 as well. All four second legs will be on SiriusXM FC.
By the way, NBC, the flagship, Channel 4 in New York.
Big time. Channel 4 in New York? I didn't actually know what channel
it
was.
It is.
I rarely have opportunity
when
to
When MLS is on one of those channels in single digits, that's pretty big.
That is big time. No doubt about that. But look, 1,000-plus fans headed down to RFK, Simon. The Red Bulls rallying the troops. They have 12 buses. But really, the theoretical question for you here is if there are four digits of away fans in a stadium and NBC doesn't place the microphone right underneath them, do they exist?
Yeah.
You may remember our argument last week in which you contended that DC fans didn't do anything simply because the noise that they made didn't filter into you on your couch.
In Red Bull Arena, if you're making noise, it does come across the broadcast. It's impossible to make any amount of noise there. And it doesn't come through.
Explain to me on the logic side, if you're not in the stadium, but you're just at home, how do you know that?
They have mics all over the field.
Okay.
I mean, and plus, the way the sound reverberates in that stadium. Now, RFK Stadium is a bigger stadium. It doesn't contain the sound the same way, so the Red Bull fans might be loud. But I'm more interested in this. You said 1,000 fans and 12 buses. I'm looking for my calculator here, because that comes out to what?
It's like a little less than 100 fans a bus. I mean, the math there is fairly uncomplicated.
No, well, okay, not all of them are taking buses.
I've never heard of 90 fans at a bus.
They're not. Well, they may not. They, some of them maybe may be allowed to drive. I mean, it's a free country, okay, and it comes out to 83.3 fans a bus.
And okay, and I've never heard of buses that carry that many people.
Well, and if you haven't heard of them, they don't exist. All right, enough of the math lesson, guys. Let's get right into the game here. Of course, a 2-0 lead for New York going to D.C., going to RFK Stadium. Simon, there's some quotes in the lead-up here that, you didn't take very kindly. Of course, Thierry Henry had two assists in that first game, and a lot of people singing his praises afterwards, as they're wont to do with TH14. Dax McCarty had this to say, when number 14 is feeling in the mood, you can't stop him. He's been in the mood the last couple weeks. He's, like I said before, as close to unstoppable as there is in this league.
Dax McCarty, a teammate of Thierry Henry, and when he talks about when his the best player on the team, Thierry Henry, is in the mood, it bothers me. Because if you're the DP player, the big money player, I don't want to know that it's only when you're in the mood that we'll get production. He should be in the mood every time. And for the look, I'm not getting on this hype train of, you know, people saying, oh, Thierry Henry is taking over the playoffs. I think he's actually playing the way he's played in MLS, which is the ball goes through him most of the time. He'll make a great play every now and then. I'm not going to go overboard and say that he's now raising his game to another level.
But he's engaged and he's passionate.
But I think he's been that before as well. And I'm going to give due where I think it's merited, and it's by Bradley Wright Phillips. So in the meantime, Bradley Wright Phillips keeps scoring goals and no one pays attention, or people continue to slight him and say he should have more.
You know what? Actually, people said that we slighted him, and you being part of that collective,
when?
By association, you've slighted Bradley Wright Phillips because we didn't talk about him that much when he scored his 27th.
We waited 26 minutes to mention it.
Yeah. Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's because of the time. I thought he should have gotten his goal, 20th minute in that game, because there should have been a penalty. But look, I think Henry is playing his usual game, and Wright Phillips is continuing to play his game from 2014. Now, the interesting debate is, of the two players, who's the most important player?
Yeah, it's tough.
For the Red Bulls.
I think it's Thierry Henry, personally, because I think you've seen over the course of recent history that other guys have scored those goals.
Who?
Yeah, Kenny Cooper, Luke Rogers, Tim Cahill.
Yeah.
That was easy. But I would disagree and say it's Bradley Wright Phillips. I think Bradley Wright Phillips is the difference right now. They went to KC and won a game without Henry because Bradley Wright Phillips scored too. I think right now it is Phillips.
Well, we'll expect him to he'll have some chances. There's no doubt about that in DC. See if he can finish him, Simon. I think we can all agree, including the listeners at home, that your August was subpar. Clearly, you being our DP, you just weren't in the mood during that time. So we're waiting until the offseason to re-up.
So you're
definitely not getting the same kind of numbers you had before.
You clearly pay more attention to my clothing than you do my mood. Because if you knew my mood, I am always in the mood, Andrew.
That's definitely going an intro. You can bet on that one. A guy who's always in the mood to get interviewed, it seems, is Bobby Boswell. And as always, we're very, very happy to have him here on the show. Bobby, how's it going, man?
It's going well. Just pretty antsy here. Ready to get this game over with on the weekend.
Yeah, and so I hear that you have to go pick up your parents from the airport. I think the last time we were talking to you, you were doing like some mortgage paperwork or something like that. This is not the Bobby Boswell I thought I knew, but I have to ask you, man, now that you're doing all these, like, you have domestic chores, you have responsibilities, you're a father, what's your least favorite domestic chore?
My least favorite domestic chore is probably changing diapers. I've gotten pretty good at convincing my wife to play rock, paper, scissors to see who does it, and she always throws scissors first, so I pretty much win every time. So it's not exciting for me, but it's one of my parental duties, and life has definitely it's evolved over the years into exciting, into much less exciting in terms of you guys dealing with me, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know. I'm.
This is interesting stuff to me.
My interest is peaked here. I always check your Twitter account just to see what you're up to. I saw a picture of your kid, who's a spitting image of you, by the way. Like, give him like 6 or 7 years, and he's going to be on guts. He's got the blonde hair. He's got the same face. But you don't want to do diapers. What's the food that you learned quickly cannot be fed to young Boswell if you want to have a good time on the diaper changing duty?
Not so much about the diaper changing duty as much as getting him acclimated to cheap food. So, like, we stay away from sushi. We stay away from expensive cuts of meat. We don't do anything that costs a lot of money. So if I can get them on like tees and things that come out of a 79-cent can, that's the way to go, in my opinion.
But hints on fatherhood from Bobby. You know, I don't have a little weeby yet, but when I do, you can bet he's going to be getting those 79-cent cans.
Do you think he's going to have great hair?
It's not going to be as good as your hair, but I think, you know, he's got some good genes there. Balding, I hope, is not in my future as I sit next to Simon here with the chrome dome. I'm sorry, Simon.
And the daughter.
Hey, bald is beautiful, man. Bald is beautiful.
There you go. Speaking of hair, though, Bobby, we're going to get into the game. I promise you. But I see that you're a big Movember guy. I'm working hard on mine. I don't think it's going to happen for me. But I'm curious, in the D.C. locker room, who's got the 70s cop look? Who's, like, mustache just, like, grows automatically? And who should we expect not to have a chance to grow a mustache in this November?
You know, obviously, Joe Willis is, he's got the porn stash, if you wanted it. He just goes with the straight creeper beard. I think Chris Rolfe is going to he's gonna lose a lot of street cred with what he's growing on his face. He's got a little caterpillar that's trying to escape, I think, for a good reason. So,
all right, so into the game, Bobby. You know, a 2-0 loss, obviously, in New York, and you have a long week to wait. You know, for those wild card teams like New York, there hasn't been time to really process any of this. How do you keep yourself occupied on a week like this? Obviously, you have your parental duties, but does it, you know, you mentioned it. You're chomping at the bit. You want to get going. How do you kind of make sure that you don't get preoccupied with the task at hand and stay a little bit relaxed, at least during this week?
You know, for me, I think it's the other way. I think we were maybe a little too relaxed going into the game. You know, we didn't come out and play the type of soccer that made us successful the whole year. And I give New York a lot of credit. You know, they did their job. But this is a whole new game. It's a two-game series. Obviously, the score is very important, but for us, we got to get back to what made us good throughout the year, and I think that was kind of making games ugly and you know, defending our box and not giving up anything and then finishing our chances when we got them. So, you know, we've amped it up a little bit, and we watch a lot of video, kind of see the glaring mistakes that we made and try to correct those, but also realize that we're playing at home and that we're a different team at home. I think the most important thing, you know, is we realize we can't give up another goal. So we got to go out there and, you know, it's a tough task, but it's one that this group's up for.
And when you rewatch that tape, Bobby, what do you see that happened in that first game that maybe you shouldn't have?
I just think if you look all over the field, we had some uncharacteristic things going on. You know, we had guys, I think our foul count was 11. And, you know, a lot of games this year, I think we had like 11 fouls in the first half. Not to say that we're gonna, you know, go out and try to foul, but I didn't think we were aggressive. And when you let a guy like Thierry Henry kind of run wild, he's got the world class ability to pick you apart, and that's exactly what he did. So I think, you know, just from a defensive standpoint, you got to be more aggressive all over the field. You can't just let guys control the ball and pick and choose what they want to do, because as good as we are at defending, there are some guys, you know, especially on that team, that are even better at picking you apart. So kind of make that part of the game ugly. And then we just didn't take care of the ball. You know, we watched a lot of our play in the final third, and it was too many easy giveaways. We didn't put them in under a lot of pressure when we did turn it over. So I felt like we kind of let them off the hook for a team that had played in the middle of the week. We should have been pushing even higher and trying to press them more, but you know, that's the past. They're going to be well rested this time around. So, you know, who's to say what they're going to do? We can't really control that. We're going to focus on ourselves and, you know, try to bring the right mentality. And you know, we've gone over different scenarios of what's going to happen and what we think is going to happen. And at the end of the day, though, it just comes down to the 11 guys on the field at the time. Can we get it done? And, you know, we've been get with our back against the wall a couple times this year, and we came out swinging and did all right. So hopefully that's another story like that.
The Red Bulls, earlier in the season, they had a 4-4-2 go, and now they have this 4-5-1. And just watching the game, it struck me that they had so many guys out of midfield running at you and the fullbacks coming at you that I think maybe there were a lot of times where you guys were outnumbered. Tactically, did you notice that watching the game, rewatching the game?
Yeah, I think. You know, for me, for me, it was just more about we didn't do, you know, there were some things that we did well, to be honest. I think defensively, though, you know, you talk about them throwing a lot of numbers forward. We kind of knew that would happen. I think the problem was we kind of funneled them to the middle, and that's where a lot of their strength is. And you know, give Peggy a lot of credit. He played a great, you know, a great game. But if we can keep the ball, you know, keep the ball out wide and you know, double up on their outside guys, you know, Lloyd Sam, he got it. He's dangerous when he's dribbling at you one-on-one. But I think the problem was, if you look at where the goals came, it was from letting them play the ball through the middle, and that causes the center backs to have to move all over the place. And, you know, I'm a big believer when we get disjointed, that, you know, bad things are going to happen. And, you know, if I needed any proof of that, it was, you know, this last game.
Now, the two guys in the center, Bobby, that have been kind of the rocks for you in the midfield all year are Davey Arnault and Perry Kitchen. What role do they play in all this, and what did you see from them in this game? Maybe not the best that we've seen from those two. It seems like when they're together, you guys generally get a result. What do you need from them at home to really stifle that attack and to keep Thierry out of there, keep Peggy out of there, and keep Bradley from getting the ball in the places that he wants it?
Yeah, those guys are, you know, they're my MVPs of our team in their season. You know, not to take anything away from the other guys, especially, you know, Bill. But those guys are the most important guys, because when they're on and they're in the right spot, they can destroy and really give the other team a hard time. So there's no simple answer to this. It's something we're going to have to figure out, because we're not sure how New York's going to play. If they play the same way, it's still not a set thing. There's no right or wrong answer on any given play. That the most important thing is that we collectively understand what we're doing, and a lot of it does revolve around those two guys. You know, if they're in the right positions and then they're making good plays, it makes everyone else look a lot better, myself included. So, you know, we need big games out of those guys, but they're both gamers. They're both winners. You know, they, if we were to bet, you know, on heads or tails, they would be pissed off if they lost that, you know? So it's stupid things that drive them, but they're winners through and through, man. So if we can find a way to get them going in the right direction, then I think the rest of the team will follow.
Now, the combo here, Bobby, that you guys are looking at are Thierry Henry and Bradley Wright-Phillips. Of course, Wright-Phillips with all the goals. You'll be happy, though, to have Sean Franklin, I assume, back to handle Henry. But correct me if I'm wrong, I think you know Bradley pretty well. You guys were partners at All-Star Game for foot golf. Of course, ETR here, we're big fans of foot golf. Was he a good guy? What makes him so hard to defend? I mean, he has all these goals, but some people are saying he should have even more.
Yeah, you know, from that experience, he was a great guy. I mean, that's one of the fun things about, you know, the All-Star Game is you get to meet guys that, you know, we're supposed to be arch enemies because of the rivalry here. But he's just an all-around good dude, and he was a lot of fun to hang out with and be partners with. We actually won that. I think the video evidence will show that the media guys, imagine that, the media guys didn't tell the truth, and they lied about their score and said they won. But you know, as far as this year goes, the year he's had, it's been a heck of a year, and I totally agree with you. I think he probably could have had a lot more goals than he did. I think the difference is that he makes unbelievable runs. He has that ability to get in behind and to find, you know, little pockets. And he's got, like I said, the quality of the guys on his team, especially, you know, Thierry. You know, he seems like he's deferred this year and scoring the goals and said, I'll set this guy up, and he doesn't mind doing it. And, you know, for me, some of the passes he's made are more impressive than the goals that are finished. So, yeah, it's a dangerous little group they've got, and they throw a lot at you offensively. The question is, can you get behind them defensively and their defense and score some goals? And I think last game we had some chances early to score goals. We had some chances late to score, and we didn't. We're gonna need those chances to go in this time and a better performance defensively if we're gonna have any chance at this.
Now, Bobby, I'm wondering who's gonna give a. Is there going to be a pregame speech of any kind? And if you haven't decided, what are the odds that we can get Bill Hamid to come in there and just yell, "You can't hold us back," over and over and over?
See, that's like another media reference. I don't even know what that means. But I think, you know, the coaches will do their pregame stuff, and when we're on the field, I always say a thing or two, or Davey or Eddie. Someone always has something to say in the pregame stuff. So, you know, this week's been a lot about getting over the anger that, you know, that we had towards the result. You know, we were angry at ourselves for what happened in New York. And once we got past that, we focused on the new game. And the new game is Saturday, and, you know, we'll be ready.
Bobby, teams in your position, and, you know, for you, you're hoping it goes well. But if it doesn't, you know, you're going to be a team that achieves number one in the East and maybe perhaps bows out in this at this stage. In terms of how to judge a season like that, there'll be some who will judge it based on how the playoffs went. Is that fair in your mind?
Absolutely. You know, I played for a team in Houston that we never blew the world away with some of the seasons we had, but we always did well in the playoffs. And, you know, it's not like we won anything in the season. We won the Eastern Conference. And, yeah, that's great and all, but I think, you know, there's people that will say, oh, well, look, they weren't a very good team last year. But for me, I don't care about last year. I just care about the group that we have. And this group, I'm telling you, this group is as good of a group that I've been around, and this team is very capable of going to the final and winning. But we didn't set ourselves up, you know, we didn't put ourselves in the best spot, but that doesn't, our season's not over by any means. So we're going to judge ourselves on you know, what we could have achieved. And for us, that's much greater than the first round of the playoffs. But it doesn't mean anything if we don't go out and do our job. So definitely, I think the playoffs are a huge thing. At the beginning of the year, you make your team goals. Every team I've ever been on, their goal is MLS Cup, because that's the last game of the season, and you're only as good as your last game. If you go out and you lose your last game, or you don't make it through, you know, that's the kind of team you really are judged as.
Trying to keep the dream alive in D.C., 2:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. You can watch on NBC and Univision Deportes that Bill Hamid reference, Bobby. Go search Bill Hamid, You Can't Hold Us Back. That was post-2012 red card, essentially him ranting in the locker rooms. It's pretty awesome stuff. He's an emotional guy. But good luck to you here on Saturday, man.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no
Thanks,
doubt.
Bobby.
There you have it. Bobby Boswell on this big game this weekend. They're angry a little bit there, Simon, and you can understand why. They go in there with a 2-0 deficit. We've kind of gone over the Thierry Henry effect, all these traveling fans. Who do they play, Rolf or Silva? I mean, it's all up in the air on that. But do they have a chance? Push comes to shove Saturday.
Well, I think D.C. are going to be in a different case than the next game we're going to talk about, because D.C., in terms of creating chances, it doesn't come easy for them. They have to create turnovers. Then, you know, they depend really on Espíndola. A lot of what we saw over the weekend, Fabián Espíndola making
Silva
a play.
When he's in, but who knows?
And Luis Silva, correct, right. When he's in. But, I mean, he's not played a game in forever. So, I mean, it's harder for DC, I think, to come back. It sounds like they realize what went wrong in the first leg. The thing for me is I don't know if it's that easy for them to address all those concerns. And so that's why I have my doubts. I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off.
For me, I'm not that worried for them. One, Sean Franklin, if he's back, is a big help. He said they kept shuttling players to the middle. They can push them out wide, and now they have a better fullback in Franklin. I think if you're DC, you go out and you play your game. All season, you've defended, and if you score the first goal, you're in a good place. If they give up a goal, yes, they're in a lot of trouble. But if they go up 1-0, they're fine.
Yeah, well, the panic button for the Red Bulls is always close at hand in the playoffs, and I think I'm with you, Dave. If you get that first goal and you foul a little bit, make the game ugly, muck things up a little bit, what Bobby said they want to do in general, this is how they're successful, then I think they have a great chance at this. It's not like this team hasn't scored this year. I know that chances don't come easy to them, Simon.
Who's scoring?
But if you look at their history this year, even though we asked that question all year long, they've found a way to get goals at home. There are plenty of instances, I think three or four, where they've had three goals or more at home, and they've had plenty of two-goal performances there. So there's a chance. We still have to see what's going to happen. Obviously, Saturday is the day, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, NBC and Univision Deportes, all the coverage right here on MLSsoccer.com. Let's move on to the Sunday matchup in the Eastern Conference. New England hosting the Columbus Crew. That one's at 5 Eastern, ESPN2, and all the ESPN brands there. Watch ESPN, ESPN Deportes, all that good stuff. And the Twitter account blew up the other day, Simon, when Jermaine Jones got fined. If you didn't watch the game in Columbus, here's what happened. On that Lee Wynn goal in the 70th minute, Jones is kind of following up the play And Waylon Francis...
Not only following up, Lee Wynn's waiting to pass them.
Right, right. Waylon Francis sees him coming from behind, and in my view, kind of sizes him up. Misses getting him the first time because you're trying to do the old Ben Olsen foul there in the open field. Gets him the second time with what looked like an elbow. He got a yellow on the play. A lot of people calling for maybe disciplinary committee action against Waylon Francis. Didn't happen. What is it? Simulation is what they're calling it by Jermaine Jones because he grabbed his face? Maybe you can explain better, Si.
Yeah, Jermaine Jones hits the ground and has both hands on his face as if he just got hit and struck in the face. And he got, I think rightfully so, punished for simulation, for faking an injury, faking a hit to the face. And when I look at it, I know people are upset about Waylon Francis. I think if you look at it in real time, you get the impression he might have violently swung his elbow. But if you slow it down, you notice that what he does is he's bracing for a collision, Waylon Francis is, doesn't come, and so then he's trying to reshuffle his body to see where he can knock Jermaine Jones to stop him a little bit.
Bigger,
so I saw a forearm to the chest is what I saw. Mm-hmm. Nothing to the head, and so I think Jermaine Jones rightly punished. I still don't get what the outrage is by all these other fans.
Yeah, I totally disagree with him, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll move on. A lot of people on Twitter did as well. That's no surprise. Simon says something, people disagree. It's all good. But look, this game is going to be an uphill battle for Columbus. We know that. They gave up four away goals in that first defeat, a 4-2-1 at home. And Greg Berhalter, the head coach and sporting director, said this week that he thinks his guys are feeling sorry for themselves. Which is strange to me for a team that really like prided themselves all year long on being resilient, on being believers. It's weird to me that would happen. Columbus fans should be concerned when a head coach is coming out and saying stuff like that.
I think he's trying to inspire them. I think he's trying to say, you look down on your, it looks like you guys are down and it's not over, I think is what Berhalter's trying to say. You still have another game to play. But it is a very, very long road for them.
I think the reason is because it's the embarrassment. You know what I mean? Like, just kind of the shame, and it takes a little while to get over that. But a week is a long time, Simon. What do they have to do? Can they do it? I mean, we're talking about whether DC can come back. This road is much, much tougher. I mean, they've
it's
got
one goal tougher.
I mean,
DC.
But it's
on
the road.
They gave up four away.
But it's on
goals.
The road.
I would argue it's better for them on the road because they have space to operate. The Revs packed it in last game.
You don't think they will this time?
I'd be really surprised if the Revs.
What do the Revs have to open it up and go for?
They don't have to. They don't have to, but it's just the natural tendency at home.
Yeah, but you
just
shellacked
the
team
4-2. I understand. But these are the things that just happen. These movements, the momentum swings inside. That's just the way it happens. At home, you feel the urgency to do it. I feel Columbus is in a better situation than DC is. Because Columbus, they have an easier time creating play and creating chances. And couple that. Being on the road, you assume you get a little more space, and I think they're dangerous. And I think they have a chance. With the Greg Berhalter's comments, I think it's a question of when has the crew faced adversity when they were expected to win and didn't. Throughout the regular season, I don't think anyone gave them a chance to make the playoffs. So this was the first real, I think, mental test for the team. I mean, they were in a good position for the playoffs, so they didn't really have to have a must win at any point during the end of the season. They put themselves in a good position with a good stretch at the end. So I understand maybe how they're really suffering this psychological blow right now. But I say they have all the tools to pull this off.
Okay, they got the tools. Can they do it quickly now? What's your quick prediction? Are they going to do it?
I think they do it. I think it's a wild game, one of those crazy games. I can see another 4-2 game, 4-1 crew.
Dave's shaking his head.
I have no idea what Simon's been talking about for the past 2 minutes. I don't think they'll do it, and that's pretty simply said.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen for them either, but we're tuning in on Sunday. That'll be a good one, 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. Watch ESPN and ESPN Deportes. Stay here, MLSsoccer.com, for all your playoff coverage. Next up, we head out west.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey guys, this is Lee Wynn of the New England Revolution, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Come on! Come on! You can't hold us back! Come on!
They can't hold us back. That is it. They can't hold us back. That's all I got to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bill Hamid. If you didn't remember the reference, well, there it is. Bobby Boswell apparently not watching much of the playoffs back in 2012. Still one of my favorite moments.
Well, he was probably playing in them.
Yeah. Actually, he was playing in them because his Houston team defeated DC United in the finals and moved on. I still remember interviewing Bobby after that MLS Cup loss. Not a finest moment for him, but always a classy guy, even in defeat. Let's go into the Western Conference, guys. LARSL, the first game of two. The second, remember, is a little Monday night football between Seattle and FC Dallas. But LARSL will get at it on Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. Up in Canada, TSN2 and RDS2. And, of course, as I said before, all this on Sirius XMFC. Really having a hard time with the word Sirius today. It's an issue for me.
You're such a whimsical person.
Am I? I don't know where that came from. But 0-0 in the first leg. Two results give RSL a win. If they draw, a scoring draw, I should say. Or if they win, they go through. LA has to win this game. Who has the advantage when we put it like that, Simon? Just in general, who do you
think? Why are you asking me? Let's go to David.
Well, because I want to.
Because David knows exactly who has the edge and who can do what in the playoffs.
I just wanted to.
Please, David, enlighten me.
I want another half-baked idea around
Simon's
Columbus.
A little bit upset because when we went off air, I then berated him over that Columbus Crew comment.
Enlighten me. Go.
Who has the advantage here?
He's asking the question. Ask him.
And I'm
based on the way that they are playing, RSL has the advantage because right now, Robbie Keane has not played well for now 3 weeks.
Who has the advantage?
On a trot, RSL.
Okay.
And I think RSL does well against LA. I think the way the two teams match up, the formations that they play, the style that they play, they do well. They perform well against LA.
How about the fact that they have two results going for them as opposed to one for LA?
Yeah.
I said that.
Isn't that a lot more logical than all that gobbledygook that
you just
gave us?
Like, take that off my crib sheet here, or you just like
where's logical coming in?
I don't need a crib sheet to know that RSL has two results go for.
Where is logical coming in when the Columbus Crew are guaranteed to move on after giving up four away goals?
All right, we'll see.
Yeah, okay, we'll see. All right, a logical battle here between two illogical people. How does LA get the best out of Robbie Keane, Simon? I mean, how do they do it? Because he wasn't at his best in that game. The whole team wasn't. It didn't seem like they got him in the right positions. And the one he had, that breakaway we talked about, it just went downhill fast after a bad touch from him, let RSL recover.
I don't think the breakaways, when he has space to operate, he's obviously dangerous. But when he has to start from his halfway line, which most of the time that's the way it was working at Real Salt Lake, at Rio Tinto, he's less affected by the time he gets to the box. I think you want him ideally with space 30 yards from goal. So that's the best Robbie Keane to me, where he has space to operate. But
agreed.
If you get there, Real Salt Lake is usually very disciplined to get guys back and surround the ball. So I don't know that this is going to be an easy game for Robbie Keane. I can't remember a match against RSL where he's had an easy game.
Exactly.
Or a good game.
He actually had a hat trick against them in 2013. But I'll say this, all three of those goals pretty much came on him skinning Carlos Salcedo. I don't think we'll see Carlos Salcedo in this match by any means. It's going to be Schuler. It's going to be Borchers. Those guys can handle a little bit better in the open field. But I went back and watched all five of his career goals against RSL. And it's all pretty much, one of them came off buildup, but also off of a long ball that Sean Franklin just outran everybody to and played him across the middle. The other ones are in situations where Robbie Keane gets a little bit of a long ball in himself, or it's direct play, or one of them was just a straight-up counterattack. And like you said, has the ball 1v1 from 30 yards in. And when he gets it there, he's probably the most dangerous guy in the league this side of Obafemi Martins. I mean, both those guys, you're fine with them having the ball. They need to see better from him in this game for sure. How to RSL, on the other hand, also, they've got to score. So.
Yeah, they do. But I think also last point with LA is Jesse Zardes has to show up because you can't let both those center backs focus on Keane. And Zardes did not show up in the last game.
Yep.
So I think, of course, the goal, which I think was onside. But for RSL, they have to finish. They create chances. They have to finish. It's really not that complicated for them. Sabo's back. Plata's back. And they just need someone. If they tuck one away and they go up 1-0, then they're sailing.
Can I also request just a highlight clip of every single time Omar Gonzalez and João Plata are matched up 1v1? Can we just ask Jeff Cassar just to everything he can do to get me those opportunities? Please do it.
Why don't you ask Bruce Arena do it for you? Why'd you going to go Jeff Cassar?
By the way, I heard a great story about Jeff Cassar in high school this week. So I was just throwing that out there. I hope they win.
You can't just say I heard a great story.
No, it's just I heard that he went and he would go train with the local pro and college teams when he was in high school and was a pretty phenomenal goalkeeper.
There you go.
Why is that a great story?
I don't know.
Why is that a great story? It happens all the time.
Oh, man. I just let
this
Simon Borg down.
This is a fellow Maltese person of descent, and his hard work and his desire, you're just brushing it under the rug.
hard work is common knowledge for Maltese people. Like, it's not a surprise you get hard work.
Okay.
You talked about Jussie Zardes, though. Like, I just look at the kid and I see a guy who has so much speed and athletic ability, but you never see him impose that athleticism on the game. And I agree with David that I almost think you want to see him do that. You want to see him become more dangerous.
Speaking of danger, man, another one back in action on Monday, as I said, Monday Night Football in Seattle. That'd be Mauro Diaz. He's back after that leg one suspension. Seattle also boasting the likes of Clint Dempsey and Obafemi Martins. This one's 1-1 headed into the second leg, Simon. Seattle got that road goal after that silly PK given up by Marco Papa in the early going. But does it really matter? I was thinking about this game. One road goal and a 1-1 draw. All Dallas has to do is score. At this point, they'd have to do that anyway to win. So does it mean anything?
Yeah, but in these playoffs, it's not like, you know, they're very almost similar to D.C. In this playoffs, they've mucked the game up a little and, you know, they try to nick a goal and they're good enough to do it, kind of like D.C. are.
Mm-hmm. I think they're actually a little bit more potent on the attacking end. Guys who can create their own shot, but perhaps not the guy to bring it all together, which is what you'd expect Mauro Diaz to be.
Right. But if I'm Dallas, I don't start Mauro Diaz. I think I want to go at Seattle with my hardest runners. So that's Tesho Akindele, Castillo, and Escobar, including Blas Perez. Blas Perez is always on the field for me. So then I put those other three, and I bring in Mauro Diaz in case of an emergency. If I need to really push the game, then I take out one of my two holding mids, and I put Mauro Diaz on to help us a little more.
But isn't this an emergency, the fact that you have to score a goal to survive?
Not from minute one in my eyes. But ultimately, to me, with every weekend, this is increasingly looking like Seattle's year. I mean, how many weekends have I questioned, okay, will they fall here?
Every one.
Will they fall here? Yeah. Will they fall here? I must say, I think they've swayed me. They've convinced me. They're over it, and you're hearing it in their comments, where they say, this is not last year's team. This is not your dad's Seattle Sound. This is a new version of the Sounders, a new mentality.
Your dad's Seattle Sounders is a silly analogy to use, because this team's
really?
Like 6 years old, so...
Also, well, I'm sure there were many newborn kids
who are now tired of us. But also, we can all admit
6-year-olds that are out there saying, this is not my father's Seattle Sounders.
We can all say that that was the death kiss right there, and that Seattle has no chance now because Simon's on board.
Yeah, that's pretty much the case. How do they get Dempsey going, though? Because you look at this game, and Obafemi had a couple chances, and you know some chances are going to come. But I think Clint, in a lot of ways, is the guy that kind of gets them going with a little bit of that swagger, a little bit of that fire. He's created some goals this year too, and in this game in Dallas, he just kind of wasn't himself. I didn't feel, maybe you guys disagree, I think his touches were the lowest all season long. Maybe that has something to do with Dallas, and maybe we can just ignore advanced stats.
And the way that they chose to play, I think a little bit was they didn't have Pineda in the lineup, so they don't have as much possession of the ball, and they sat a little bit deeper on the road. One of the things you see with Dempsey is once he scores one, that's when he starts playing that way, with the flicks and the spins and the turns. And a lot of that times, that first goal comes from something scrappy, whether it's a through ball that pops out to his foot or if it's off a set piece and he just gets a toe poke, he gets it in, and then all of a sudden he's going. But I think for Seattle, you're not worried about it because no matter what, defenders have to focus on.
Yeah,
whether absolutely. He's playing well or not. And so you're always going to generate more chances and more space with him out on the field. And they're going to be back home in front of the crowd where they won Supporters Shield. I think they have a lot going in their favor.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Seattle going to expect to win this game, this Dallas side. You mentioned Tesho Akindele, Simon. Reports out there coming out of Canada that he declined a call-up from the Canucks. He has that dual nationality. We talked to him about that when he was on the show, actually, and he kind of sidestepped the question a little bit, but it's increasingly looking like he's going to be a guy that plays for or hopes to play for the United States. I think he's working on getting that citizenship very soon. What do we think about that? Because we've seen a guy like Teal Bunbury go that route, and initially it kind of worked out for him, and he was vilified up north, but I think Teal maybe had a little bit more of a pedigree up there, what with his dad being an international for Canada as well. Tesho Akindele is an international. Should he be putting his eggs in the U.S. basket?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, you look at Bunbury and you look at Akindele, I think they're very similar in position, obviously. You have Bunbury occasionally plays wide. Akindele always
played wide all year long for New England.
Yeah, for the most part. But I think when I look at them, I don't know. I see something different in Teixeira Candela. I think he can, whether it's the size, and not that Bunbury's small, but the way he uses his body. Mm-hmm. I think he's more apt to grow into a target role, that Blas Perez role, and learn from a guy like Blas Perez. So I think there might be more to Teixeira Candela than Teal Bunbury ultimately has shown on the international level.
I just think the one thing, I don't know from any sort of insight, and we've heard a lot of rumors, and obviously he's not in the roster. No one actually said the reason that he turned it down.
Right.
It could be that it's in the middle of the playoffs, yeah, and he thinks he's still going to be playing.
Sure.
We don't know if maybe they said, well, conditionally you can accept it, and if you're still in, you cannot come. But it hasn't been said that that's why he turned it down.
But let me ask this. If the U.S. national team program is in this situation right now where a guy like Jordan Morris – a kid, yeah, in college still, is being called up to national team matches. You wonder if the depth at the position is at its lowest in such a long time, where Teixeira Candela is a real option. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jurgen Klinsmann has, or someone in the national team staff has inquired about Candela and let him know that, hey, you know, you might be in the mix here.
I wouldn't be surprised in the terms of the fact that it feels like they're trying to turn over every stone. But in terms of style and position, I would be surprised.
Why?
Because I think the one thing that they do have in Terrence Boyd and Jozy Altidore and potentially Giassi Zardes is big athletic forwards.
Whoa. If I would agree with you that you have Jozy, then as a, maybe as the sub for him, maybe Boyd. But I think Candela.
Yeah.
Is maybe closer to what Altidore is than any other option you have. Don't put Zardes in that conversation.
Okay.
Zardes is not that type of target guy.
I don't know that I agree.
He's
not. I don't know
he's
that.
Not. He's totally not.
He's also still early in his development. I also don't
know
that
Altidore
know
what
is that
he is.
Prototypical target guy either way. Let us know what you think about Teixeira and Ekindele's future at Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. Make sure you catch Seattle Dallas on Monday, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. On NBCSN, UDN in the United States, TSN2 and RDS2 in Canada. Real quick before we get out of here, guys, we're coming up on the mailbag. Have some interesting stuff there, including some produce advice needed from Simon Borg. Orlando City FC dropped a new jersey here on this, Wednesday, I guess. We're still waiting until next week for New York City FC's jersey. What do we think of that one?
Gorgeous. Love it.
Done.
Superstar.
So, Simon, that means that you're not that impressed, I'm guessing.
No, I like it a lot. I like it a lot. But here's the thing. Are they going to play with all blue, all purple? I'm colorblind.
Yeah.
All purple shorts and all purple socks. To me, that takes it to another level.
Yeah, I think
it's
great.
Much. I think
if
I'd
it's
love
white,
to
if it was white shorts and white socks, then I might reserve judgment.
Yeah, I think white shorts and purple socks as a side bet would be great. On a side note, Simon Borg thought his blue backpack was purple. He's thought that since he bought that backpack. Just an interesting note for all you ETR fans out there. When we come back, the mailbag. We'll see you around in just a few minutes.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Robbie Keane with the LA Galaxy. Listen to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys Simon Borg, David Goss. I am Andrew Wiebe, and we are joined by Football MLS's Diego Pinzon here to talk a little bit Latino Del Año with us. We mentioned on the last show, it's down to a different type of voting. I just want to congratulate you on eating an apple. You and
Thank
Simon,
you
and Simon on the same wavelength here. But give us some Latino Del Año information for those out there.
Well, thank you. The apple is really good, by the way. We are today right now in the round of 16. The voting started today, Thursday in the morning. A lot of players that were cut during the group stage that were surprising was Raul Fernandez because he has a huge, as you know, a huge amount of following in Peru. But
wasn't he right there last year, I think?
He was in the final, the final four, but this year just didn't make it.
Didn't happen. So who are the favorites right now?
Of course, Eric Cubo Torres is up and running. He won his group against Raul Fernandez, including Omar Gonzalez in that group. Then we have also Jaime Pinedo, of course, the LA Galaxy goalkeeper. A lot of following for him.
Votes flowing in from Panama, I expect.
Alvaro Saborillo, who is the current Latino del Año champion. I guess you call him like that. Yes. And, of course, Marco Papa, who amazingly broke records in the group stage. He's just amazing. I think the whole Guatemalan country is just voting for him.
Just rallying behind their guys. Now, Simon, I just want you to listen here very closely, because Diego really understands how to pronounce things well, but not go overboard and be grating about it. So that's something that you can take on board when your mood, your form dips in the future.
I'm comfortable with my pronunciation. Okay. I've actually given Diego some tips.
Has he?
Oh, were they right?
The Malta national team. I've gotten a lot of tips from Simon on that.
Oh, well, there you go. Latino de Año. Go to MLSsoccer.com or Football MLS to vote for that one. Heading into your mail here. Pass over to Dave if you would, Diego, and we'll get the gas man back.
Do you want
on
the
this.
Apple as well?
He could take the Apple. Actually,
ooh,
we have some questions
apples.
About apples.
Sharing
not
apples, big no-no.
No, not on Simon Borg's world. Speaking of Simon Borg's world, though. Aaron Morgan and Paul Idaho, I need to know how Simon picks his apples. I ate two subpar apples in the past week, so I need to know the best way how to get a good apple. And Pete in Fort Collins, Colorado says, I'm curious as how to Simon picks his apples. What's his process? Personally, he flicks each one, and if the apple is quote-unquote high-pitched, then he picks it. If not, back it goes.
To me, that's getting too in-depth. It's very simple. It's very simple. And there's so many categories of apples and so many names. And, you know, it's Macintosh and Washington apples and all these.
Fiji.
Yeah, all the.
Fiji are
so,
a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
Those are useless.
Golden Delicious I'm a big fan of as well.
Titles are totally useless. If you nice like a nice red apple, this is what you do. You run your hand across the apples, the different apples. And the apples that have the stickiness to them.
Oh, Lord.
They are going to be the sweetest. And you pick, and you can't go wrong with any of them.
See, are you guaranteeing that everyone likes sweet apples in this situation, or are you just saying that's what you like? I prefer apples. I want crunch. That's the biggest thing to me is the crunch.
Really?
Yeah, crunch and pop. That's
apples
what
are a sweet fruit.
Yeah,
and if you're not in for the sweet, why are you eating? Go eat a celery. Go eat a piece of celery.
What I would introduce to you, Simon, is the idea that perhaps that stickiness is pesticide. And maybe that you're choosing the most pesticide-heavy apple that is sweet because nature hasn't turned it to what it should be.
There is not much of a price difference between conventional apples and organic apples. I only shop in the organic section, and my advice here is coming from touching organic apples.
I
wish everyone could see Simon's hands running
just
across
caressing,
the imaginary apples.
Caressing apples. Mike Moon in Madison, Wisconsin. That idea of playing sounds from Simon as he's listening to a game and then having listeners guess what he's responding to, I have to admit, it's kind of brilliant. Not sure it's going to happen, but it's definitely my kind of podcast
material. Yeah, we promise stuff all the time and never
come
through.
We never come through. This time I'm going to do my very, very best. We're going to shoot for...
That doesn't count for much. He's going to do his very, very best.
We're going to shoot for New England Columbus since you and Dave... had such a back and forth around that one. I'm sure you mentioned when we were
heated.
Not taping.
You're going to come in the office. For
you're not going to. You're going to root for Columbus so hard in that game, just to spite Dave and I.
Yeah.
So
he said it's,
all
you
these
said
other
it's
people.
The biggest game you're going to root for.
Yeah. He says, Andrew, for Christ's sake, go to an apple orchard. It's worth it, and get the cider and the donuts while I'm there as well. I do enjoy cider and donuts, so I will
the
have to get
apple
that done.
Donuts. Oh my god.
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you so much, Mike Moon. He just got into the league. You know, into the league.
If you're going to have a donut, an apple donut is a waste.
No, they're not. When
go
you get
for
them
the Entenmann's donuts. And if you're going to, if you're going to really intake calories, half calorie intake, go for those.
You just
what a waste.
Poo-pooed a fresh donut from an apple orchard.
And I like that you're
place.
Using poo-pooing because that's something that I've been called out on recently. Let's finish it off. The reason we played Why Can't We Be Friends is, My personal favorite emailer to the show, who doesn't get read that much, that's Alex Lederer. I think I probably got that wrong. He says he's a.k.a. quote-unquote the hater. He's from Grand Junction, Colorado. He generally calls in or emails in to berate me. And this one, he says, I keep trying to give Andrew the benefit of the doubt, but he just keeps proving himself to be a bad word. It sounded like Andrew was telling Peggy his son was acting crazy. The guy's at home. Show some respect. And on the subject of respect, maybe Andrew should ease up on Simon, considering how much Simon knows about the world, about how the world actually works, instead of being wrapped up in which neighborhood people live in Brooklyn, or giving people crap for not liking the Foo Fighters. I hope Andrew goes out of being a D-bag, but I'm not holding my breath. Simon, keep up the good work.
Did I not? I didn't get anything?
No, no. Nobody usually hates on you. But Alex,
Alex, thank you for being an honest email, not someone who's kissing people's behinds.
Except for yours.
And no, a nice email telling it how it is. Alex, I'm a big fan of people who shoot straight from the hip, and you clearly did that there.
Alex's dream upon dreams is that Nick Fershaw would be the host of this show, and I would be relegated back to my previous duty. And you know what, Alex? I actually share that dream with you. I think Nick Fershaw was a magnificent host and an incredible human being, and we're all very, very sad to have lost him. But I'll say this. I thought it was great that...
Lost him?
Well, yeah, he moved. You know, I thought it was great that, Peggy's son was behind. I didn't think I was...
You called
him
crazy? You really did?
No, I didn't. I said he's...
Peggy called him crazy.
He said he's like his father.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I thought that was awesome. I thought the family connection with the Red Bulls going
strong.
Right. And Simon's the one that crushed on the Foo Fighters, so I don't know how I'm getting lumped into that one. I've listened to and enjoyed the Foo
Fighters.
You're
an enabler,
but privately,
Andrew.
Privately, you've told me the Foo Fighters are not your favorite.
Right. Yeah, but not my favorite doesn't, you know, that's just like a kind of not sticky apple that you don't pick up, but still is a good apple.
By the
know?
Way, flipped on the TV the other day, HBO special about the Foo Fighters.
Oh, wow. There you go. Something.
Yeah, because they've commercialized themselves.
But I will give him one thing. I am completely wrapped up in which neighborhood people live in Brooklyn. It's just a terrible part of being from being a person that lives in Brooklyn. You always
he was
going to
say being from
I know,
Brooklyn.
I know, and I knew that you knew that.
Wichita.
Dang it. Dang it. Oh, well. Hey, look. Tune in to all the MLS action this weekend through Monday. Four games, all the news on MLSsoccer.com. You can listen to all the games right here on SiriusXM FC Channel 94. TV listings are there. Videos are there. You'll have to watch me. You know, maybe you don't like me if you're like Alex. That's okay. Simon Borg will be around too. And we'll try to record that for him. Big thanks to Bobby Boswell. And big thanks to you guys. Simon Borg, David Goss, Andrew Wiebe. We'll catch you on Monday.